Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, I'm Brian Hyatt, and this is Rolling Stone Music Now. And I have with me Rob Sheffield and Brittany Spanos and John Dolan. And we're going to talk about Rolling Stone's new 500 Greatest Songs of All Time list. Perhaps you've heard we have this list. There's been a bit of controversy. We're going to address that controversy. We're not afraid of the controversy. We're going to dive right in. We're going to wade in that controversy. And first of all, let's hear Carson Daly. Carson Daly was mad. Let's hear what Carson Daly had to say about this list.
No Led Zeppelin, no Elvis, what? No Coup in the top 100. No.
Yeah, I mean, whatever, man. I don't know what to say about that, except, first of all, Led Zeppelin is in the top 100. Stairway to Heaven is around number 61. Good song. There was no Stairway rule in this list. We had Stairway. I don't know. I think people are acting like the entire list is just like TikTok songs from last week, which I think there's a freak out on that side. And then there's also people who are missing a bunch of more recent stuff. You know, it's can't make everyone happy. The goal of the list was not to make anyone happy. And just throwing out everything at once, we should mention also that the list, again, Rob and I were trying to impress this upon people on Twitter. The list is done by a vote. There's a huge voting panel. We tabulate the votes and put it out there. It's not like some hallowed authority. One person at Rolling Stone decided on this. I think people have a lot of misconceptions, but I'm glad that people are talking about this. Rob, what do you make of the reaction? I feel like I get to ask you this question every few months, every couple of years, whenever we have a list. Rob, what do you make of the reaction?
Well, as far as I could tell, people are excited about the list, which is an amazing list. Aretha Franklin, of course, at number one with Respect, which is just, you know, a fantastic song that always ranks high. Every time Rolling Stone does a poll like this, Respect is always in the top 10. But just really fantastic to see that in the top 10. So many, to see that at number one. So many great surprises, like the fact that the Beatles song in the top 10 is Strawberry Fields Forever. For me, that was mind-blowing. And that's something that I've had a lot of conversations about since the list came out. Watching music fluctuate over time in terms of how people perceive it. So the fact that Fleetwood Mac's Dreams, you know, was in the top 10, which a song that, you know, a few years ago wasn't even considered a top-tier Fleetwood Mac song. It was just another song that was overshadowed by bigger songs on their album. It's just kind of a beautiful thing that we're seeing the music evolve in terms of how people hear it.
Yeah, Brittany, what do you make of just the way the world took in this list so far?
I mean, to go directly even to Carson Daly's reaction, like, if I were him, I would be so thrilled that so many songs that he had a hand in helping make popular and helping make important made the list this time around and have had sort of like a critical turn in terms of how people look at a song like Hey Ya, or look at a song, you know, look at Britney Spears and look at a lot of these artists that were so pivotal to that era. But yeah, I mean, you know, it's a list. Stay mad. I don't know. Like, people are going to react. You know, songs are very personal. And I think, you know, of course, the albums list had a huge reaction too, but I think a favorite song is sometimes even more personal than a favorite album. Like, it's a very specific sort of 3 to, you know, how long is Stairway? Like 10 minutes, like whatever, it's a long song. But like, you know, it's like a pure, it's very, you can impress a lot of feelings onto it. You have a lot of sort of very specific ways that you read the song, that it relates to your life, to the moments in your life, same in a negative way as well. So songs tend to be very personal in that way. And so people were very passionate about what was left off the list, where things ranked, without realizing that they were judging it in the same way that we made our own ballots, which is you put the songs that have a personal relationship a lot of the time, mixed with that, with the stuff that you really want to see amplified and that you think is deserves like this sort of critical consensus behind it. And I don't think people realize they were ranking the songs in the same way that everyone who voted for it did.
In short, we would like to invite anyone with complaints about the list to go cry about it. No, I'm just kidding. No, we welcome all feedback and complaints.
But people should sit down and make their own ballots. So I feel like that's the thing. Is like
absolutely
everyone that had. I was like, I would genuinely love to see like what that ballot would look like for you, because you're going to rank it in the same way that like so many of us did that for a list like this.
John Dolan, what surprised you about the way the world is reacting to this list, if anything?
Well, I think what everyone's kind of saying is just a sense of, you know, I think somebody said that it's been looked at on 125 million times on RollingStone.com. You're not going to make 125 million people happy. So I think that, you know, it's just, it's the list, I think, which is a little frustrating. I think it does do a really good job of balancing and just the way the vote came out is so many constituencies. And if you compare it to the 2004 list, which was very, very defined by the 50s and 60s, and sort of the 70s with the 80s and everything after is kind of like a little bit of an afterthought. This didn't just throw that out and say, oh no, now it's, you know, it's Britney and it's Britney Spears and it's, you know, pop from the last 5 years or 10 years and stuff like that. It puts it all kind of in context together. And some of the juxtapositions and stuff like that are what makes it fun, is that it's saying it's all great. And it is, because the experience you have listening to Toxic versus the experience you have listening to like a Rolling Stone, like they're both wonderful songs. And like, unlike the albums list, I think, where, like Brittany was just saying, it's like they are moments in time. It's like with an album, you spend that time listening to it. You got 50 minutes. You can go, well, you know, track 8, it kind of gets a little slow towards the end. It's got some weak parts, but a song is transcendent and you love it. And, you know, when you're making this list, you could have had a top, you could have gone to 500, you could have gone to 1,000, and it's really difficult. And so the personal aspect makes it fun.
Yeah, there is something much harder and much easier about songs, ranking songs, because albums honestly have a clearer canon. And people, I think, are confused even about such basic things of, is it a list? It's not a list of songs, the compositions. If we take it in Grammy terms, there's Song of the Year and Record of the Year, and Record of the Year is recording. This is the recording. Song of the Year is just the raw composition, which is always a dubious distinction. Anyway, but this list is clearly recordings. It's the greatest recordings of songs of all time. It's not the, you know, even some songwriters were like, well, where's Happy Birthday? It's like, no, it's not that kind of list. Like, basically, no. Like, it's very clear. It's a list of
it's
recordings.
Not enough Bach on here.
Yes. We got that. That was a prominent, there was a complaint of the famous Puccini.
Yeah, Ted Gioia, the jazz critic, was like, I'll teach these guys about music. It's like, it's all right, I guess.
Also, that was Jason Isbell who said that Happy Birthday should have been on the list. Which is funny, because Happy Birthday is a really crummy song. It's a terrible song.
And it's overplayed. Awful. I've heard it too many times.
Awful birthday song, especially when Ratchet Happy Birthday by Drake exists. Like, why? Yeah.
Exactly. Why for it? Exactly.
But yeah, there's no Puccini on the list. Let's do the top 20. Let's start with number 20, Dancing on My Own by Robin, which I believe is the most recent song in top 20.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it's fascinating. I mean, that's a song that people love, but the fact that people loved it that much really interested me.
Yeah. I mean, if you listen to pop in the last 11 years since that song came out, the footprint that song has left behind so quickly is insane. Like, the influence it's had on every corner of pop music is pretty extraordinary. And I don't know that there are songs where you can, you know, like, especially like dance pop songs specifically, that kind of carry that over so quickly. You kind of see that influence kind of come back and ebb and flow. But Dancing on My Own has been a constant ever since it came out. It was such an instant, timeless classic, and totally deserve. It was very high on my personal list and totally deserves to be in the top 20.
Our house is a mess. Come on in. I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen. America starts the day with America in the Morning.
First of three pushes of storminess.
Hi, I'm John Trout, your host for the latest news, politics, entertainment, business, and weather.
A speech with political overtones.
Our staff of correspondents provide a fast-paced look at the world with specialized reports from where news happens.
The judge's decision was based on finding there is a likelihood.
So far, the central bank appears to be threading that.
Concise, accurate, and fresh each day.
America in the Morning, the podcast, available wherever you listen.
John, what can you say about the sort of voting patterns that led to that particular landing?
I think that, not to keep going back to the 2004 list, but that was, the voters in that tend to be from the sort of rock and roll generation. And I just think we really wanted this time to get a group of voters that, you know, was younger and had experienced the last 10 years and 15 years, you know, firsthand and really felt strongly about it. We wanted to definitely kind of balance all the decades, and that's how you have to get the right kind of voters list, and I think we did. And I just think this is exactly true. It's like this song is an instant classic that has a long shadow over the rest of the lists. Like a lot of songs, Lord, Taylor, they are influenced by this.
Anything worth saying about who tended to vote for this?
Yeah, I mean, I think some younger artists. I mean, I do feel like if younger, you know, maybe indie rocker type people had a pop song, it would probably be that. And then, younger critics. I mean, I think this is just a landmark song of the last 25 years.
For sure. And number 19, I mean, I don't know how people could say that like this list is, you know, is thrown out the past when John Lennon's Imagine, which is actually fairly controversial as far as actually being a good song at this point, made it to number 19. That's about as sort of old school boomer anthem as you can get. I don't even like the song very much. So, and yet there it is. Do we have someone, and we may not, who can make a case, almost a contrarian case, despite the fact that it landed so high, for the continued greatness of Imagine by John Lennon? It's okay if we don't.
I like the song. I didn't put it on my list, but I do like the song. I don't know. I didn't realize people didn't like it.
Oh, yeah. A lot of people hate it now. It's like people are like big mad at it. Yeah.
I feel like it's just one of those songs that's sort of that blanket statement of like peace and hopefulness. And I think it's one of those songs that we turn to during kind of catastrophic times. And it's just like one of those, it's like a standard at this point. It is a standard. And somehow was not, maybe it would have ranked higher if people didn't turn to it in March and make a bunch of celebrities made a video covering it. But who knows? But it's definitely, you know, it's a pop standard. I like Imagine. I didn't realize it was so controversial.
I'm not sure it is controversial. It's in the top 20 on this list. A lot of people like this song. It's a song that younger people tend to like more than older people. And that's kind of the way this song has always been. This is a song that grown folks who pride themselves on being worldly kind of like have rolled their eyes at. But this song, like a lot of the classic rock and roll songs on this list, like Bohemian Rhapsody comes to mind and so does Dreams. It's an old song that is more popular among young people than it is with old people. That's part of the fascination of this list is seeing, you know, the way different audiences hear music that's been around forever. But so the eternal popularity of Imagine with the young is something fascinating and something cool.
Yeah, I think for so many of the songs on this list is like you want to get the songs, and what resonated with the voters are the songs that are kind of like you play that in any room in the world and everyone will know every single lyric of that. Like there's no, I cannot imagine any person in my life who doesn't even listen to the Beatles not even knowing Imagine. Like, you know, like I feel like every person in my life who like may not even be able to name a single Beatles album or anything else John Lennon did, they would be able to tell you every single lyric of Imagine and every single intonation of like how he sings it, because it's just a standard at this point. It's like Happy Birthday.
Number 18 is what can you say about Purple Rain by Prince? It's pretty killer. It's pretty funny that it was him trying to write a song that was in the vein of like a Journey or a Bob Seger song. That was literally, if you read what was on his mind, he was trying to figure out why people like those kind of songs and like sort of like big, slow building arena rock anthems. I've never heard which Bob Seger song he was thinking of.
Wasn't he opening for him? And he was kind of like, how come people like this guy? And he was like, he sat down and did the hard research of figuring out like how you would do it. It's kind of funny.
Maybe it was like turn the page.
Yeah.
Maybe it was We've Got Tonight.
Oh yeah. That's possible. Yeah.
And he always does that one live.
I love that kind of cross-pollination, which you also see all over the list, but you see at number 10 with Outkast, Hey Ya. It's them trying to do a version of, you know, specifically, the story goes that they had seen The Hives at Bowery Ballroom, a show I was also at, and came away wildly inspired. But anyway, so Prince trying to do this thing, and then writes the greatest slow burner arena anthem of all time. He outdoes the stuff he was inspired by. Much like Smells Like Teen Spirit is a much better song than More Than a Feeling. Sometimes your take on the thing is the greatest thing. But I mean, I almost lack words for Purple Rain. Give us some poetry, someone, of Purple Rain.
The history of the song really changed dramatically after he died, because that was a song, more than others, that was a song people went to grieve and to mourn. And I think we all associate the days after his death, his incredibly shocking and still devastating death. And that is a song that I think we all heard about and listened to a lot in the days after his death. Bruce Springsteen opening his next show the next day, opening his show with Purple Rain. It was, you know, kind of a measure of how that song sort of spoke to how we were feeling at that time. Everybody loved Prince.
But there's just so much room for Prince to sort of display his greatness in that recording. You know, I mean, just that vocal leap he takes in the part, you know, it's like, I know, like that is just one of the greatest moments in the history of recorded music, which we can say, because we're literally saying it's one of the 19th, but I mean, it's just, it's, you know, and the guitar solo, everything about it is just completely extraordinary.
Also, people always try to play guitar like Jimi Hendrix, but like Prince was a genius at knowing how to sing like Jimi Hendrix, which nobody ever tries. But when he says, you know, like it's time to reach out for something new, that means you too. You know, he's singing that line right to me. He's singing that line right to all of us.
Rob, always big on the talking parts of songs. And
why shouldn't I be?
No, absolutely.
There aren't enough David Lee Roth monologue songs in this top 500. Where is Everybody Wants Some? Where is Unchained?
And again, no, I mean, if Purple Rain is now the definitive power ballad of all time, that feels about right. You know, it's better than the other ones. It's just, there we go. And number 17 is a song that people love more than they ever did, and they've loved it a lot for many years, but kids love it. There are a lot of kids who think it should be number one, and we're super mad. I saw a lot of young people being super mad that it was not in the top 10. And it's Bohemian Rhapsody by Queen.
I bet anything that, you know, if we redid this list in 10 years and there was more sort of Gen Z age critics, that Bohemian Rhapsody would shoot up even more. That would probably be in the top five. It is. I mean, I love that Queen is like having like such a big comeback, and it's so wild and fun, because I mean, Queen was like super, you know, it was like nostalgic, but also like there was sort of still like a big love for them when I was a kid. So it's amazing that Queen is sort of this mainstay in culture, where every generation sort of has this come to Freddie Mercury moment where they become obsessed with him and become obsessed with the band. And that warms my heart. So be pissed, Gen Z, on behalf of Queen. Like, I hope that one day they'll bump it up to the top five.
Their day will come. Yeah. I mean, it's funny, because on the old list, it was like, I think in the 300s somewhere. And it's interesting to see like how certain people's stock has just skyrocketed. And I think they're probably number one in terms of skyrocketing stock.
Queen is a great example of music that is from the past. You know, like the lead singer is gone. You know, Freddie Mercury, he's gone. He's in the past, that sense. And yet more popular now than ever, and more popular now with young people than he was with the young people of his era. And we're seeing a lot of that on this list. Stevie Nicks, David Bowie, Joni Mitchell, these are legitimately veteran artists, some of whom have passed away, who are nonetheless more popular now with younger listeners than they've ever been. And That's a fascinating thing to see.
Yeah.
Another example, just looking ahead, is I think would fit that as well as Waterloo Sunset, which ended up very, very high on the list. And it's just that song's taken on a life of its own with people over the generations, where it was, it at the time it was like they were leaving behind the rock that had made them popular, and that he was kind of, wasn't he afraid to play it for the rest of the band because he thought they would think it was too soft or something? And over time, that's so high for a song like that, I think, and it's because it's so beloved.
Yeah, and that's and you're knocking us out of order, but that's okay. That's number 14, and I did want to ask about that. That is a great song, and also one that, you know, critics and stuff have always thought is one of the greatest songs of all time. But I was somewhat shocked and pleased to see it up so high. Who voted for it, John? Was it again Young Critics, or was like how did it end up so high this time?
I think that is one that probably gets a little bit from every group. You know, like it's young, older voters, you know, love it, and it's such a beloved. It's kind of got a real big, you know, indie rock kind of following, and it's just over the time just considered, I think, to be one of the most beautiful songs ever written. And I think that was one that obviously it had to get kind of from everybody to get up so high. I mean, 255 people voted in this. And so that's a lot of people, and over 4,000 songs got votes. So it's like you have to grab from kind of almost every group to end up at this high up on the list. And to see a song like that, which is kind of delicate and a little maybe a little obscure kind of compared to something like Imagine, to be that high is just kind of exciting. It made me really, that was one of my happiest things on the list, I think.
Yeah, it's just a pure heartbreaker, much like number, and again, I'm jumping around, but number 11, God Only Knows by the Beach Boys. It's just a heartstrings tearing song, and there it is. But number 16, Crazy in Love, Beyonce featuring Jay-Z. And I love the fact that it's sort of in musical dialogue with our number one, with Aretha Franklin's Respect. If you listen to them back to back, you can really hear the extent to which the Beyonce song is a clear update of that kind of sound, of a Stax Volt-y kind of sound from the 60s. Even I know Aretha wasn't a Stax Volt, but you know, still. But amazing song. What's worth saying about that, Brittany?
I mean, one of the greatest star-making moments in pop history. I mean, this is someone who had been performing since she was a teenager, you know, Destiny's Child, at a time with girl groups, pop vocal groups were doing well, but I don't think anyone expected the staying power of, you know, especially from a more critical standpoint of like the staying power of these vocal groups, of the solo artists, and be able to break free of that at a time also where, you know, a lot of the artists that were trying to break free from their groups were not, you know, unless you're Justin Timberlake did fine, but like most of them were not doing so hot on the solo turns. But then you have someone like Beyonce, who's so hard to ignore, someone who is literally mentioned in Outkast Heya. That's how beloved and adored she was, is that she gets a literal name shout in another song from the top 20. She like made this incredible pop standard, you know, the song that you played at any room, again, like any party, like everyone knows every lyric, every vocal thing she does on it, every Jay-Z line, like, you know, every single bit of this song, and has given us one of the most powerful pop performers of all time, and someone who absorbs so much, so many of the artists that are on this list. She has Prince in her blood. She has Aretha in her blood. Like, she has these artists so clearly influencing and impacting her.
One of the things I love about a list like this, and I don't understand, frankly, why anyone doesn't love the fact that you go directly from Crazy in Love to I Want to Hold Your Hand, the Beatles. And I would point out that the driving emotion of these two songs is precisely identical. The mood that these songs were written out of and trying to evoke is the same mood. And it's so interesting that that's what people want to hear, that that's what people put it near the top of a list like this, because that ecstasy of being in love is an emotion that the pop song is very good at addressing. And there it is. I mean, that song is pure joy.
Yeah. It's simplicity for both of them. Like, just simple emotions. It's just love songs, you know? It's great. It's, I mean, like, seeing them back to back is really beautiful. And like you said, like, it's just kind of having those same driving emotions for two songs from two wildly different moments in time and moments in music, be on this list right next to each other is a really great thing.
And I love that two Beatles songs in the top 20. One of them is I Want to Hold Your Hand, and one of them is Strawberry Fields Forever, which are opposite extremes of the Beatles sound, but they both have that emotional urgency that's, you know, a beautiful thing.
And we talked about the Kinks at number 14. again, right next to each other, British Invasion Buds, the Rolling Stones, this is so amazingly corny, the Rolling Stones' Gimme Shelter at number 13. Was that the highest ranking Stones song as well in 2004? Does anyone recall?
No, I'm pretty sure it was Satisfaction. And that's another interesting thing about this. It's fun to see how certain bands' kind of canons have shifted and changed. Like, people want the apocalyptic Rolling Stones now. They don't want the angry, angsty. That's Satisfaction's high on the list, too. But I think considering the times we live in, I guess it reflects the times that, you know, Gimme Shelter would be the Stones song that did so well.
It's the Stones song that feels like now, I guess. It feels like living, unfortunately, in 2021.
Yeah, it's a song. I mean, it's interesting to see with these songs, you know, like they're not new, but they speak to the moment more at different times. So to me, it's wild that people are feeling very Gimme Shelter and also feeling very Strawberry Fields Forever. You know, like the Beatles and Stones are always high on lists like this. It's very interesting to see that these are the songs that struck the most enthusiasm and passion in the voters.
It's kind of funny too. You were talking about, you know, these kind of super optimistic love songs in the top 20, but the only love song in the top 10 is a kind of a scorched earth breakup song. And after this, and then you get to I Want to Hold Your Hand at 15. It's like the, you know, rock pop music's number one emotion is not in the top 10, but except in its kind of more dark, you know, maybe form. And maybe that's just kind of how people are maybe feeling these days.
Let's do number 12. Stevie Wonder's Superstition. John, again, maybe talk about where Stevie's gone in the list and where this song particularly has gone, especially over the...
I think he's stayed kind of... It's funny, his canon in this thing, I think, has stayed pretty much the same, as far as I can tell. I think Superstition is kind of maybe higher ground, but I think Superstition has always been the one that does the best. And it's just everyone's favorite, you know, funky pop song, I think. It's just people love it so much, and you can watch great performances of it on, you know, live and stuff like that. And I think he sort of introduced it when he was touring with the Stones, right? Isn't that, like, he kind of was like finding that sound during that tour, and there he is right next to him. And it's just this fun, poppy, hard-hitting song that everyone loves.
Robert Brittany, want to weigh in on that one?
I mean, yeah, I love Stevie, and I love the song, and this is one of those songs that kind of carries again through generations another sort of standard, and we're I think that's what so much of this list really captures, is that the way that we look at the songs that are those songs that everyone kind of knows the lyrics to, everyone really kind of carries through their lives, we're seeing those really defined even more specifically by this list.
Totally. And we're seeing for a lot of these artists, the songs that did best in this particular list were the ones that are more tough as opposed to more upbeat. But, you know, like the fact that Gimme Shelter is ahead of Satisfaction, the fact that Superstition is ahead of You Are the Sunshine of My Life, that's, I think, it's kind of similar to Gimme Shelter in that way, that it's a very superstition fraught time.
And, of course, the clavinet on that song is so key to this sort of the 70s modern Stevie Wonder. And he once said that it was... that the clavinet was his electric guitar, and that there would have been no other way to get that sound. And it shows him as a riff writer, as an instrumentalist, as just with this casual mastery of just every element of popular music. It's an absolutely monster song. He was going to give it to Jeff Beck. And again, here's the cross-pollination. And Jeff Beck thought he was given the greatest guitar riff of all time. Berry Gordy very intelligently told Stevie Wonder to hold on to the riff himself. But, I mean, it also is like there's Stevie Wonder being one of the greatest guitarists of all time without even playing guitar. So there we go.
Stevie giveth and Stevie taketh away.
there is a sick Stevie Ray Vaughan version, I have to say, but that's another story.
So, since we were talking about Beyonce and how everything connects to Beyonce somehow, I do want to point out that Superstition, number one hit, it set the record for the longest one-word song title ever to hit number one, with 12 letters in the word Superstition, held that record for over 30 years. And it was broken by Beyonce, who had the first 13-letter word to have a number one hit, number one one-word song title, Irreplaceable.
Great song.
the cosmic Stevie Beyonce connections, but but Beyonce has that cosmic connection with everybody.
Yeah.
Number 11 is the Beach Boys' God Only Knows. And again, look at all these old songs in the top 20. Like, come on, I don't get the thing that there's not old music on this list. It's like, it seems a willful avoidance of what's in front of you to act like there's not a lot of classic music on this list. I will say, I'm just thinking is, you know, there was something, those of us who grew up in the New York area at a certain point in time knew that there was something called the Firecracker 500, which is the local classic rock stations would play. And that was their idea of the 500 greatest songs of all time. And it was like Bad Company and like Layla would always be number 3 and Stairway would be number 1. And perhaps they've confused this with the Firecracker 500. because there's, you know, because there's no like, I maybe it's that they were expecting that. But the Beach Boys, God Only Knows. Is that, I mean, I personally might prefer Wouldn't It Be Nice, which is a very similar vibe, but I, you know, God Only Knows is an incredibly beautiful song. What do we make of this particular song at this particular place at just out of the top 10 at number 11?
Last time it was behind Good Vibrations. Again, it's that sort of Gimme Shelter, Superstition, Strawberry Fields Forever principle we were talking about.
No one's feeling Good Vibrations here in 2021.
Excitations all the vibrations are at bad. An all-time low. Yes. excitation's definitely not part of this. Last time, you know, like Good Vibrations, every time, you know, like there's Good Vibrations is always like the one, it's the Beach Boys magnum opus thing. You know, God Only Knows it's more how people are hearing these days.
We started counting down from number 20, and we'll see what we get to. I'm sure we'll return to this list in future episodes. Number 10, we mentioned earlier, is Hey Ya by Outkast. I was a little surprised. I think it's a great song. I like so many songs by Outkast. I don't know that I would have expected or picked Hey Ya, particularly by Outkast. There's a couple other Outkast songs I might have picked for the spot, but the more I kind of sat with it at number 10, it kind of makes sense to me. It's and in part because what I talked about it is these two hip hop geniuses doing their version of kind of a rock song, and it crossed so many barriers, and it's so indelible, and it's a song that everybody knows, and I don't know. What do we think?
It's one of the greatest pop songs of all time. Like, it's literally just like the song that transcends so much of what people expected of Outkast, what Outkast sounded like at the time. You know, I think there's, of course, like the fans of Outkast who have a lot of songs that they would rank a lot higher than Hey Ya. But even then, you still love Hey Ya. Like, it's like so catchy. It's so much fun. It's silly. It's irreverent. It's like not necessarily trying to give you anything else but fun. Like, there's no other, it's like one of those songs where its only purpose is to make you dance, and that's a beautiful thing. Like, there's no sort of weird, I mean, not that I know, like, no hidden meaning to Hey Ya. Like, I'm not, you know, there's nothing to like dissect beyond, you know, just like shake it like a Polaroid picture. Like, it's just a fun sort of, kids love it. I think it's one of those songs that still kind of really attracts younger audiences to this day and will continue to. So ahead of its time and the way that was constructed, the way it sounds, it doesn't sound like it's from a specific year. Like, you could have told me the song was released in the 80s and I would have totally believed you, except for the Beyonce and Lucy Liu references. But even then I would have been like, maybe, you know, maybe someone saw the future. But like, it just sounds so timeless in that.
Yeah, I mean, to that point, I mean, I was listening again to the new Lil Nas X album, and it's like, I was like, well, if you just had 808s and Heartbreak and Hey Ya, that could serve as a lot of the template for what he does. You know, it's fascinating. And you're right, it was super futuristic at the time.
And it predicted so much of what the next 20 years of that fusion of what hip-hop and R&B and pop would sound like, of sort of that genreless sound that is so catchy and is really meant to make you dance. It's like what all of the internet is like all the viral songs sound like they want to be Hey Ya.
Hey Ya invented TikTok, essentially. I mean,
Yeah, I mean, if Hey Ya came out today, it would be just as big as it was when it first came out. There's no content. Every other song, I'd be like, maybe, but like Hey Ya, there's no, I cannot imagine a version of it coming out today and not completely dominating the charts for the entire year.
number 9, Fleetwood Mac Dreams. And as Rob pointed out, it's one of those songs that has vaulted up in the popular consciousness. It wouldn't even have necessarily been the Fleetwood Mac track that you would expect to be so high. And it's really fascinating. What do we think is, I mean, obviously just a great song and deserves it, but can we speculate about the kind of forces behind the elevation of this particular song out of the many great, even Stevie-focused Fleetwood Mac songs?
We need a full hour for this one. But it's one of the more mystical Stevie songs, of course. Like, it has that sort of witchiness to it, that sort of Fleetwood Mac 70s kind of, you know, dreaminess to the sound, very California to it. But it also captures a relationship that people have continued to be fascinated with for 40 years, which is Stevie and Lindsay. Like, you know, you can put Rhiannon up there and another great song or, you know, things like that. But like, this is a song that's so clearly about this breakup and such a biting diss song at Lindsay. And it's just also incredibly beautiful and catchy and dreamy in California. And that sort of like 70s nostalgia that so many people continue to have in terms of the fashion, in terms of like, you know, that sort of like, I don't know, the reimagination of that era that people want to have with like the style of it. And so much of Dreams captures that. And it's just continued to really fascinate people because there's also a great story behind it. And people love that story.
The way the Fleetwood Mac story keeps on going, like particularly with, you know, younger audiences who just, they hear what Stevie Nicks is doing better than any previous generation has. The same thing with Joni Mitchell or David Bowie. Younger listeners, just they're hearing more clearly and more accurately what the artist is saying. And Freddie Mercury's in that category too. But it's wild that this song, you know, it was a big hit at the time. It was a, you know, a number one hit, but it wasn't one of the top tier Fleetwood Mac songs and sort of ones that loom large in the public imagination. And the last time Rolling Stone did this poll in 2004, it didn't even make the top 500. And now it's in the top 10. And there's something kind of amazing about that, that there's been this sea change in the way people see this song that's from 1977. And it speaks to kind of what the whole list is about in terms of music is time travel.
There really is like a Fleetwood Mac song for each generation too. Cause when I was really young, it was like Landslide was the big Fleetwood Mac song because everyone was like, you know, there's like Dixie Chicks cover and the Smashing Pumpkins cover. And those were always on the radio, but Landslide was like the Fleetwood Mac song that really dominated music and public fascination. And you look at like Don't Stop in the 90s, like there is really just like a kind of post peak Fleetwood Mac of being together and post breakup, like there's always this song that kind of fits a moment in time.
I would say the song that people freaked out about the most, and I enjoyed that and I enjoy it being where it is number 8, Missy Elliott's Get Your Freak On. It's interesting because when we did the list of best hip hop songs of all time a few years ago, it didn't rank as high as that. It was like number 34 or something. And that wasn't even that long ago. So it's really interesting and pleasing that it ended up where it did. John, again, like, what can you say about just sort of your theories about how it happily landed at number 8?
I just think, yeah, being kind of a modern classic of, you know, the same memories you have with kind of Outkast, or how it kind of blew everyone's mind, the kind of run that Missy and Timberland went on during this time, and this being the peak of it, was just so innovative and so radical and sort of touched everything else after it a little bit, the way they were combining genres and the kind of futuristic sound and just being so proudly weird and still being as super poppy, I think was a big sort of, you know, just had a lot of influence on what was possible in music over the next bunch of years. And it's like, it's just nice to see that, you know, kind of like, it's really gratifying to see that honored by all these voters.
I think it's worth pointing out that 2001, 2002, 2003 are sort of peak moments for millennial nostalgia, just sort of chronologically. And it is interesting that if you look in the top 20, those years are pretty well represented. So I do think there's a generational thing as well. But a lot of times that can have great results. And I think this is an example of it. Rob, what do you love about Get Your Freak On? I know you love it.
It's just an amazing song. It's so funny because, you know, what we were saying earlier about Fleetwood Mac, that they have so many bangers that you could see so many Missy songs in this slot and you wouldn't be surprised. It could have been Work It. It could have been The Rain. That's the one I voted for. That was in my top 10. The Rain, Super Duper Fly. But Missy just has so many just astounding songs. The Missy and Tim combination, nothing like it. Always imitated, never duplicated. And I love that its stature and its mystique has just grown over the years.
And let's do one more song, and then we'll leave everyone wanting more for the next time we return to this list, which we will. We will return to this list sooner rather than later. But Rob mentioned this earlier, the Beatles' Strawberry Fields Forever at number 7. And what I like about this song landing so high, among many other things, is the fact that it truly is a non-LP single. It existed on its own with Penny Lane on the other side, but it's not part of a Beatles album. And so I enjoy the places, the many places on this list where it breaks away from our 500 albums list, where it has things that could only be on the songs list. And this is a perfect, perfect example of that. And it's also, if I may say, a really fucking good song. I believe that in the Jeff Emerick book, John comes in and plays, Jeff Emerick was, of course, the Beatles' key engineer, and he describes John coming in and playing on acoustic guitar Strawberry Fields Forever for the rest of the band. And Paul's like, that's really extraordinary. That's good job, John. Like, you know, it was just this quiet admiration, because it's pretty, you know, pretty good.
And also the whole collaboration involved, you know, like every single Beatle is absolutely like topping themselves on this song. It's easy to ignore Ringo's role in this song, but you know, this song doesn't exist without Ringo. His commentary all through the song is just mind blowing.
And I've brought this up before in past Beatles conversations, but this is, I believe, the impact of Across the Universe as a film on many, many young musicians and writers. This is a very clear, this and I Want to Hold Your Hand, two of the most iconic scenes in Across the Universe. I believe it was the impact of that film.
You know, that's a theme throughout the whole list, too, is kind of like, you know, Tiny Dancer or whatever. There's a lot of examples of that, actually. It's what people remember from...
Yes. Well, could anything, we could talk for an entire episode about this sort of infinite recursiveness of a movie about Rolling Stone featuring Tiny Dancer, then reverberating into Tiny Dancer, moving up into Rolling Stone's list, and whether that, you know, that, there's something so, thank you, Camera Crow, there's something so delightful about that. But Brittany, I think you're 100% right. And I think that I didn't even mention it because, you know, we once did a whole episode on it, but the Bohemian Rhapsody, the Queen movie is called
Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yeah,
is the film.
Bohemian Rhapsody, the film.
In the same way, Wayne's World was the entry point for me as a Queen fan. Like, that was like seeing Bohemian Rhapsody affected the way that I listened to Bohemian Rhapsody for the rest of my life. Like, I have to do the headbanging every time you get to that part.
As far as I know, I first heard that song in Wayne's World.
Yeah.
You know, I wasn't a huge Queen fan, and I was wrong. Dave Marsh told me they were bad, so I avoided them. But I think I first heard it there. So I would be the last person to begrudge any generation discovering their songs from movies. And I do think, yeah.
Or from, like, you know, Pink Moon's on here. And I hope Pink Moon's on here because of Nick Drake's, you know, greatness and how beloved he's become to many generations of people who like Nick Drake. But, like, probably because it was in a car commercial, you know, that's kind of probably for a lot of people, like, how they encounter. And there are examples of that throughout the list. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's A-okay, you know.
And that's a beautiful thing. And also those songs elevated those movies, too. Like, those songs, like, you know, it's as much Cameron Crowe putting Tiny Dancer in Almost Famous as Tiny Dancer in Almost Famous makes that scene such a classic. Like, I can't even picture another song having that same effect or hold in that scene.
This is our after credits scene, and we will return to this list in another episode really soon. We're not done talking about the 500 greatest songs of all time. I don't think anyone out there is done talking about it. You're still yelling at each other about it. So, you know, feel free to yell at us politely about it on Twitter. And thank you very much to Brittany Spanos and Rob Sheffield and John Dolan. I did want to mention, again, Brittany Spanos has a new podcast with EJ Dixon called Don't Let This Flop, This Week in TikTok, and that's available wherever you get your podcast, and you should check that out. But Rolling Stone Music Now, this podcast, will be back next week here on SiriusXM's Volume, Channel 106. And yes, we are also a podcast. Download us wherever you get your podcasts. Please subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts. Maybe leave us a nice review on Apple Podcasts. That's always appreciated. As always, thanks for listening, and we will definitely see you next week.